I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. This is Peter here from the Lore Boys. Just letting you know that this week you will be getting the podcast that we recorded live on twitch.tv/theloreboys during our 16-hour Extra Life charity stream on November 3rd. During the stream, we had Trav on from the Strangerlands podcast, where we discussed various races from D&D and what the differences are in their homebrew D&D setting. So, yeah, check us out, and thanks for listening.
Welcome to the. Oh, are we recording a podcast or what? Hey, everybody! Welcome to the Lore Boys live episode.
Lore Boys live show.
If you weren't here in Twitch chat, you don't know the nightmare we just experienced
that we have just awoken from.
Oh my goodness!
I'm Ethan Palmer. I'll be your host today. I'm joined with my co-host,
James the Heck Miller.
You don't have to wave for the podcasting medium.
But, well, you can wave. We're doing it live too. Don't discourage including people.
Never wave to the audience. Yeah, no.
We don't we don't acknowledge Twitch chat at all. Yeah. And also,
Peter O'Donoghue, I figured it out after 50 minutes to desktop capture.
And sitting through 45 minutes of technical difficulties to guest appear on the show is.
Howdy, everyone. It's me, Trav. From the Strangerlands podcast.
From the Strangerlands podcast. We've had Murphy Giller on the show, who is another member of the Strangerlands, and we've played one of their promos, and they've played one of ours.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that.
Of course, of course.
So, Trav, do you want to just really quickly run through what the Strangerlands is for anyone who's forgotten?
Yeah, so the Strangerlands podcast is a real play 5e D&D podcast, and it is a very unique take on the D&D world. We spent a lot of time developing our own steampunk version of this world. It's called Pylos. And the story is very unique to anything we've ever heard. And what makes it incredibly unique, to kind of segue into what we're going to be talking about, is the lore behind the Strangerlands. Yeah, so in a lot of high fantasy, your three primary races are humans, elves, and dwarves. Well, we took that concept and turned it completely on its head. So in our lore, there was a celestial war about 1,000 years ago, and the gods conscripted the three primary races to build these vast machines that were infused with magic, which is where our steampunk-esque lore comes from. And as a reward for assisting them in this war, they brought them up to the celestial plane to live an eternal life. So they no longer exist.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's interesting.
So the three main races that you mentioned are in Strangerlands are Drow, Dragonborn, and Tieflings?
Correct. That is correct.
And the player characters are Aesimar, Bugbear, Tabaxi, Kobold, and there used to be a Firbolg on the show, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
You Perfect. Can play as Aesimar?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it makes for a very interesting medium via podcast. We get some really weird reviews because of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Very relaxing, slept like a baby.
It was
kind of horny.
It gives him meaning to, I push the orc off the cliff, you gently caress his back, right?
Yes, yes.
So, the drow. For anyone listening who doesn't know what they are, I assume Peter and Jamie don't because they're fools who don't know anything. They're dark elves, essentially.
Whoa, I was way off the mark there. I thought they were the blood-drinking rat people.
I was going to guess like some sort of undead thing, but I don't know.
I'm fucking with you. Dritzduwarden's a drow.
Dritzduwarden is a drow.
Yeah. Yes.
The most popular drow.
Yeah. Yes. Written by R.L. Stein.
I love Harry Potter.
J. Kojima Rowling. Yeah, yeah.
Some nerd somewhere just got cancer.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Raise money to help him.
Yeah. Just nosebleeds all over the place. Yeah, so drow, sometimes known as the ones who went below in the world of Faerun and the Forgotten Realms, are the dark elves who populate the Underdark. The drow worship the goddess Lolth, sometimes known as the Queen of Spiders or the Queen of the Demon Web Pits. So Pylos, are the gods the same?
Some are. Yes, there are some gods are the same. There are others, especially with us player characters, where we kind of branched off. We were given some freedom to pull real patrons into our characters. My character, for example, a lizard folk, storm sorcerer, worships a very old Babylonian god called Adad, who is the god of storms.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
And I believe, not to get... One of the other deities that our Asimar player, Colleen, her character, Tash, was a worshipper of Aramid, which I believe was... I don't remember if that was from D&D lore, if it was Gaelic. I know she's got a lot of Gaelic in her character, but I don't remember specifically if that god was pulled from actual Gaelic religion or if it's from a different lore.
Well, it's unfamiliar to me, so we're going to say it's from a different lore.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
I'm the Dungeons and Dragons expert, right? So
That's fair. That's fair.
So is Lolth a god in Pylos?
Yes. The drow do worship Lolth. They also, much like in the D&D lore, the Faerun lore, they have a hypersensitivity to sunlight. And the way they traverse during the day is, being that it's a steampunk world, technology is a little different. So they have these special goggles they wear and garb that keep the sunlight off of them.
Okay.
They're gingers.
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah, yeah.
So they're the Gaelic, then.
It's gotta be Gaelic lore, yeah. The terrible sunbirds.
Sure.
So Lolth, the demon queen of spiders, mm-hmm. or the queen of the demon web pits, is the goddess of the dark elves in Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
She's an evil deity. She likes to encourage infighting among her chosen people, the drow, by claiming they need to constantly cull the weak. And also because the main figure of their whole society is a goddess, they're a matriarchal society. So they have like badass women, they all worship spiders, and they all kill, they have no problem with killing the weak or like letting the weak die.
We've talked about this before. You've brought this up.
So we've talked about the Underdark.
Yeah.
And the drow live in the Underdark.
Right.
I'm sure I mentioned them briefly during our Illithid episode.
Yeah.
What's with the trope that spiders always have matriarch?
Well, female spiders are bigger because they...
are generally bigger.
To my knowledge, because they have to carry the eggs. To my knowledge, female insects are larger because they do not stretch. So they need room for eggs. That's why they shed their shells, is because they don't stretch.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Well, there you go.
That is my theory. That may be completely wrong.
So you guys...
I think it's pretty standard, yeah.
Lore Boys canon, lady spiders is big because spider shells don't stretch.
And drow molt, and the ladies are bigger because they need... room for egg?
Right.
Yeah.
Thorax is one of the bits of an insect.
Abdomen.
The thorax, I think, is the middle part. Head, thorax, abdomen?
Head, thorax, sure. Knees, abdomen?
Sure.
Lilu says, yeah.
So, under Lolth's guidance, the drow believe in two things. Forcing all the races of the Underdark into subservience. Remember, this includes Illithid. And the extermination of all the other elves. So, I don't know how much you want to spoil from Pylos, but did the drow succeed in a way?
So that remains to be unknown.
Okay.
The drow lore in that aspect in Pylos is they are part of what's being referred to as the Decladine Empire. It's a very fragile empire that was constructed by our three primary races, the drow, dragonborn, and tieflings. The drow are indeed a very chaotic race, even in our lore. They do worship Lolth, and for that, ultimately you have three very chaotic races that are balancing a spinning plate, essentially, which is all of Pylos. And As far as the extermination, if they succeeded, that remains left to be known. I would say yes, simply because after the Celestial War, elves were brought into the astral plane for all of eternity. So okay. By default, the elves are going, huh, our objective is done. We got to find something else to do.
Yeah. one way or the other, they're gone.
Yeah. So I think that's where that goes.
Cool.
Cool. So the other members of the Dunedain.
Decladine.
Decladine.
The Dunedain is from Lord of the Rings. I know, and yeah. The Rangers.
I know. Thank you, Peter. So the Decladine Empire is the three races, the Drow, the Dragonborn, and the Tiefling.
Mm-hmm.
The Dragonborn in the Forgotten Realms, sometimes known as the Ashmarked Ones, were inhabitants of Abir before it merged with Toril. So obviously, Pylos, not so much to do with Abir Toril. It's not like an alternate Abir Toril.
No.
Okay. So the origin of the Dragonborns on Abir Toril is largely unknown. They're not just pony dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Is their origin known or established on Pylos?
It has not been. So to flush this out a little bit, I am actually a player. For those of you that are listening that have not listened to our show, we all kind of had a hand in building the world, but the explicit details are revealed to us as we go. Mm-hmm. So things I do know about Dragonborn, in our world at least, is they do in fact worship a version of Bahamut that it started as a joke and it's now official canon. It is Brohamut.
Does he have a Coors Light?
I don't remember if it was Coors Light or Bud Light. His effigy does in fact have a beer in hand. He's wearing the sunglasses with the slats across them. Yeah.
Shutter shades.
Yeah, shutter shades. He's got the like the surfer look to him, so he's wearing like the crazy like beach gear, sandals, shorts. And he's a total fucking like party
Puka shell necklace.
Oh yeah, yeah. Puka shell necklace, yes, that's nice. Totally a thing.
Awesome. So if they all worship Brohamut, are metallic dragonborn the more common dragonborn in Pylos?
We actually have not come across a metallic dragonborn. We've seen a lot of primary colors.
So the chromatic dragons worship Brohamut?
Yes, yeah, they all worship Brohamut in our world.
Okay, so in
I have a question because I'm super lost. There's metallic dragonborn.
That's what I was just going to explain. In Forgotten Realms in Faerun, there's metallic dragons and chromatic dragons. Mm-hmm. Chromatic dragons are red, white, blue, whatever. Yeah. Just normal colors, whereas chromatic dragons are gold, platinum, silver, etc.
Depends on the Pokemon game.
Bronze, yeah. The chromatic ones are Pokemon, the newer Pokemons, and the metallic ones are the new Pokemon games, and the chromatic ones are the old Pokemon.
Yeah, so you've got gold and silver are metallic dragons.
Yeah.
I think that breaks down, though, because the metal ones are supposed to be better, right? And the old Pokemon's better.
So the metal ones in Dungeons & Dragons are good aligned. The chromatic ones are evil aligned.
Okay.
A red dragon is an evil dragon. A gold dragon, which is gold is the counterpart to red,
is a good dragon. Okay.
Bahamut is the most prominent of all the dragons in the Forgotten Realms. It is a platinum dragon worshipped by like a lot of paladins will worship it because Bahamut is considered a lawful good being, basically.
Yeah. Pokemon platinum dragon.
Yeah. Yeah, so in our lore where that differentiates rather is as far as good and evil, races that you would inherently think to be evil aren't. A prime example being one of our player characters, Craig, who's a bugbear. Bugbears are inherently evil characters. But he's actually playing a very good-aligned character. He's just very misunderstood. People see him, they're afraid of him, they instantly go, to prison with you!
So he's Shrek.
Essentially, yeah. Very, very Shrek-y.
Craig is the Shrek of Strangerlands. There you go. More Lord of the Rings canon for you.
I love it. That's great.
You managed to tie anime into D&D. Fine.
Science said it couldn't be done.
Which one of you is Cory in the house?
uh, But yeah, so it's a lot of, with alignment, it's more action-based than it is racial. So in the case of the Dragonborn, they are, primarily the Dragonborn we've met have been pretty decent fellows. They are also the core of the law enforcement of Pylos, particularly of, oh my god, my brain just broke. The city that the main city that... No, that's the Empire. I'm drawn. They're going to kill me. I have to look this up real quick.
The capital city.
I can't
city
believe. The capital city, which I am totally...
Ottawa. Yeah.
It's...
Thrace. Oh, that's it. Thrace.
Thrace.
Yes, okay. That took me a second. So the one of the capital cities, Thrace, they're actually the primary law enforcement there.
The Dragonborn.
Yeah, the Dragonborn are, yes.
Cool. So it's more like, it sounds like it's less to do with good, neutral, evil, and more to do with lawful, neutral, chaotic, because you mentioned the drow were chaotic.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of aligns more that way. There are some evil, don't get me wrong, but yeah, it's more...
Oh, good, I was worried.
Yeah, yeah. It's, well, because the chaotic is very much out for yourself.
Yeah.
Type which of fits the mindset. Drow. Yeah.
So some theories from Faerûn where the Dragonborn come from, even if we don't know in Pylos. They are humans or another race, humanoid race, twisted when exposed to the energies of the spell plague, which we talked about on our first or second episode of Dungeons & Dragons.
I think it was the first one, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were the result of experiments of the cult of Tiamat, gone awry. So Tiamat is, we've talked about her before too. She's a five-headed dragon that represents five different colors of
chromatic dragons.
Chromatic dragons, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So she's evil, and she's this five-headed thing, and they think maybe the cult of Tiamat was trying some experiment to raise her or summon her, and they turned a bunch of themselves into dragonborns who could then reproduce. Azgarath, lead divine among the dragons, creating the dragonborn as servants to the dragons. This one seems the most likely, that a god just kind of willed them into existence to serve his people.
More likely than feral dragon and human orgies.
Yeah. Only slightly more likely.
Only slightly more plausible, created from nothing by a god. Okay, right.
I'm glad we got our fan or art of the day, just a bunch of dragons and people fucking, because that's really... I wrote this hoping that the Stranger Lands episode, the art would feature dragons and people fucking.
Oh, God. Is that what I have to draw now?
That other god, the bro dude, just like, nice.
Nice, yeah. Yeah. Rohamed sets it all up, yeah. You know some people who are really down.
He's got like a puka shell on his dick, too.
Oh, my God.
Like a little puka shell bracelet.
Puka shell...
Cockring. Yeah, Michelle Cockring. Yeah. Oh, we got a nice from chat. Thank you, chat.
And the last theory, in a battle between the dragons and the gods, Azgaroth was killed, and the Dragonborn simply sprang into existence from his blood. Not to be confused with the Dragonborn of Bahamut, which are non-draconic humanoids who had pledged their devotion to Bahamut to be reborn with draconic features. So there are... like dragon kin, which were humanoid people who Bahamut did specifically turn into essentially dragonborn, but those aren't the dragonborn that we're talking about. So the third race that lives in Thrace.
Wait, it's ASMR.
No, not yet.
No? Damn it.
This is what you get for reading ahead of my notes.
That says tiefling.
Yeah, so Peter got it. He didn't whisper it into the mic, but it is tiefling.
I know there is a tiefling in Neverwinter Nights 2. I played that game for a couple hours, and she is insufferable, and then I uninstalled it.
Okay. I think it's a pretty general consensus across the board.
So that tieflings are insufferable? Or that, yes, you should uninstall Neverwinter Nights 2?
Both.
Okay.
So tieflings are very edgelord as far as D&D goes. Even for D&D, they're pretty edgelord.
Sorry, somebody in chat just said, if James does ASMR again, they're going to leave.
I think it's fair. I think we all agree with that, right?
I'd say so.
I'm kicking him out and keeping his dog. So tieflings are humans touched by demonic influence, usually from having grown up on demonic planes or from having a parent who fucked demons.
Okay, so this is where I get my orgies.
This is, yeah, if you want to do demon orgies, I think it's kind of boring. I think dragon orgies is better, but...
Yeah, demon orgies have been done.
Yeah, demon orgies have been done.
Done to death,
done
man.
Done to death, right?
Yes. Different strokes.
Create different folks.
Couple. Yeah. Yes.
That is awesome.
So
I don't remember that painter that draws all those actual like satanic orgies.
Michelangelo.
No.
Da Vinci.
Nope.
Banksy.
Picasso.
Nope, it's not Banksy. Banksy and all his black and white demon orgies. It's like if you look at that guy throwing the Molotov sideways, it's actually just a bunch of devils fucking.
Yeah. That's why he's so popular, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
So as the combination of two distinct species, tiefling culture is kind of undefined. Because they kind of just come... A lot of tieflings will just kind of turn up sometimes as a result of their dad fucking a demon.
It popped into my head. I was going to Google it. Sorry. It's Hieronymus Bosch.
Okay, cool. That's the artist. Tieflings do, however, fall into the two stereotypes of being obsessively curious about their demonic heritage and being repulsed by their demonic heritage. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of where the edgelord thing comes in. They're always like, I'm going to be an evil guy that's going to embrace my demonic roots, or, oh, I'm rejecting my evil roots. I'm not like that, Dad.
Okay.
I'm gonna grow up to be a painter who paints demonic orgies, not participates in them.
He's gonna grow up to be Hieronymus Bosch.
Yeah,
I would love to play the second one. That sounds like so much fun.
So, what are tieflings like in Pylos?
So that is a very interesting question because what we know of tieflings is actually very little.
Okay, you did tell me they were one of the three main races. So
they're one of the three main races, but they are so. Each race has a different role in maintaining Pylos, and they also govern themselves in a separate fashion. So whereas the Drow are hierarchical, they have houses, just like in Faerun.
Like me, like a people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So a hierarchical structure for those who, for the uninitiated, is essentially you have like a family house and they're competing for rank. So there's infighting and things of that nature, subterfuge, all sorts of things.
They're like noble houses vying for power.
Exactly. Yes. So
the Drow, I guess they would have stolen a lot of that for Morrowind because the Morrowind has a lot of great houses as well for the Dark Elves.
Yeah.
Yes. Thing. Yes. The Dragonborn are, I believe, if I'm correct, they are a patriarchy where they have a single, like, king.
They got Daddy Dragon for the dragon orgies.
Yeah. A single ruler. And the tieflings operate via a council. There's three named tieflings that are actually in our introduction in the very first episode. A good friend of ours, actress in Ohio, whose Twitter handle escapes me at this moment, read a monologue we wrote and did a phenomenal job of it, and it kind of explains a little bit of that. But they operate as a council, and they're also they're very secretive. They're a primary race, but they're not very public. We did not encounter very many of them in Thrace. Actually, we didn't encounter any at all in Thrace. And a little backstory to us, we actually played in this world for about 3 or 4 months before we released our first episode.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And at the time, we had another tiefling in our party who was where we started off in Sentinel, which was this backwater town, was an oddity. It was very rare.
Okay.
So they're a primary race, but they're very, like elves, they're very secretive.
Okay, they keep to themselves.
Yeah.
Cool. So in Faerun, because of their demonic heritage, they're generally feared and distrusted. They don't really have a homeland, as they were the progeny of humans and demons. So I guess if they're super secretive, they're kind of distrusted in Pylos as well.
They never have a homeland, so they're always in Strangerlands?
I do believe I'm positive that they do have a homeland. We just don't know where that is.
Okay.
At time of writing.
Yeah.
Sort of
thing, yeah. So the first of the player characters we're going to talk about is the one that Jamie gets all hot and bothered for.
Oh, yeah.
The Aesimar.
Awesome.
In Faerun, they are a human-based, plane-touched, not dissimilar from tieflings, just rather than being touched by a demonic plane, they're touched by a divine plane. They are often, but not always, descended from angels or other creatures of pure good alignment.
So in this is probably Asimar are probably some of my favorite lore in both D&D and the story we created. So in our story, Asimar, so there's a celestial war 1,000 years ago, right? Asimar were essentially on the losing side of that war. So they are, they're still like fallen angels essentially, but they were abandoned. And so because they were on the losing side, they are outcasts of society. People look down on them like dirt.
Okay. Look at this dumb being of pure light.
Yeah.
And they also, well, it's, they look down on them like dirt, and some people still view them as enemies. You know, even though this war was 1,000 years ago, a lot of military, a lot of enforcement in Pylos view Asimar as dangerous. Okay. Because of what they were capable of during the war.
Yeah, you mentioned that it was a divine, with all the main races, or the traditional main races being exiled to the Astral Sea. I guess the Asimar would have been the ones fighting to keep them there on Pylos.
They were, so, in this war, it was, the races were divided. There was a war between the gods, and the gods conscripted the mortal races to help them, is essentially what had happened. And humans, elves, and dwarves were on the winning side. Everyone else was on the losing side.
Okay.
And so as that war progressed, those that are the Asimar are basically the ones that were on, there were the creatures that were on the losing side that were part of, so we incorporated angels, archangels, and everything else into this. There's a lot of I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but a lot of spiritual stuff like that going on as well.
Okay.
So Asimar and Arlor are essentially angels that were on the losing side, and so their gods abandoned them and left them on the mortal realm.
Oh shit.
Oh fuck.
left behind by their generals.
Yeah, pretty much. They were, you failed. You can stay here. This, the way we're taking it, we don't know if that's 100% the case. The only person who really knows that is Colleen, and she's very good at not revealing things.
That's your DM or your lore master?
That is our player, our Asimar cleric player.
Okay.
Colleen, she plays Tash.
Okay.
So, exceptionally rare throughout Toril, Asimar have no true societies. Very few Asimar had siblings who were also Asimar, in large part due to the rarity of a celestial or god boning down with a human.
Mm-hmm. They're like a bunch of little Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
They're little Jesuses, and Jesuses are rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing about them, Asimar and Arlor, is they are actually spoken into existence. The gods spoke them into existence to serve a purpose, which was to fight that war.
Okay, cool.
So
they could just speak them out rather than leaving them there.
So, well gods are assholes sometimes.
Have an ending
sometimes.
Quotation mark.
the Asimar and Arlor, their physical appearance, they have these designs all over their body, these ringlets all over their body. And it's actually their name. And their name is a very long title, and it's everything they stand for, essentially. But depending on their actions, that name can change.
Okay.
And the more their name changes, the further they become from the deity that they pledged to after they were left here.
Hmm. So they were left here, and they pledged to different deities? They picked a new one and said, maybe this guy will bring me home.
Yeah. Tash's character is actually an elf.
Okay.
Became and I was spoken into existence as an Asimar, and her deity, they lost. She was stuck in the mortal realm, and throughout the course of the story, the actions and the choices she's made have been causing changes in her, and has been, without giving away too much, changing her name.
Okay.
So Tasha's going through puberty. And there
essentially,
was no boning
yeah.
down between gods and people.
Essentially, yeah. So Tash's name is now changing, and because of that, There is some really good story points that are happening, and as well as lore points that are happening. And we're discovering that Asimars may not be as tied to their deities as we thought.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah, they also don't have siblings in Faerûn. Due to the fact that Asimar that spring from ancient bloodlines, long left dormant, were even rarer. So it is possible that or Asimar in Faerûn, if they die, 100 years later, they reincarnate, essentially. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of have these ancient bloodlines that don't reincarnate after 100 years, and they just like kind of pop into existence. I feel like that's really one of those things that it's like, hey, you want to make any character in Dungeons and Dragons you want, you could just be like, yeah, well, I'm a long extinct race of Deva that's been sitting dormant, kind of thing.
Yeah.
The first Asimar were created from slaves when they prayed to their gods for help. The gods created their bodies, resulting in the first Deva. So it's kind of I guess the initial ones were first spoken into existence in Faerûn. Mm-hmm. And then since then there's a couple other ways that they can do it. I don't know if an ASMR itself can hook up with a human and make a new ASMR, but it doesn't seem likely.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either on our end, but that hasn't really been explored.
So bugbears would be the next race we'll talk about. The apparently evil Krog or Shrek.
Yeah.
Bugbears are tall, hairy goblinoids, which seems kind of counterintuitive or oxymoronical. Many scholars of the late 14th century DR believed that bugbears and goblins were both bred by the hobgoblins as slave races, with bugbears serving as elite soldiers.
I have a question. Yep. What's a DR?
I talked about this last time on we did a Dungeons and Dragons episode, which I don't think you were there for. I think it was just me and Peter.
Sure.
But it's a Dale Reckoning. And it was basically the first time the elves allowed the humans to, like, gave them their permission to actually build cities in their forests. Mm-hmm. It was led by a man named Dale, last name Dale. And this date, the 0DR marks that date.
Okay.
So it's like, it's a timekeeping system, and this is 14 centuries, or in the 14th century after humans were first allowed to live in the wilds of the elves.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
So bugbears, like other goblinoids, have a reputation for being dim-witted and brutish. It sounds like Krag or Shrek. It defies that stereotype.
Sorry.
Yes.
we're just, as this is a live episode, we've got some memes coming in through the chat. If only you had the 3.5 edition book of erotic fantasy book for the crossbreeding chart.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then a bunch of heart emojis.
if only. Honestly, if you have that and want to mail it to me, please.
We'll do an episode.
Yeah. I'll do an entire episode on crossbreeding.
I just want to do research.
I mean. That's get to doing back end stuff, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Hey. My kind of research.
So, what kind of crossbreeding is Krag into?
So, funny you should ask that, actually. we just recorded it is November 3rd. We just recorded last night, and there was a major progression in some shipping going on in our show with Krag. It was really good. But Krag himself is an anomaly. He is a bugbear by appearance only. He plays a bugbear. This is really interesting. A bugbear druid, of all things.
Okay.
So bugbears are known for being goblinoids, these vicious, violent creatures.
Big, bulky, hairy, ugly.
Yeah. Chewbacca on steroids, essentially, is what they look like.
Oh. But the pecs poke through the fur a little bit. So you can see the skin underneath.
Yes, like, exactly.
They're Bigfoots.
They're Bigfoots, exactly.
Okay. I don't know these at all. I always pictured like a 4-foot bear with like ladybug wings on his back. Like, really.
So a lot of people think that, but for whatever reason, a bugbear has like a small beak.
They're cool. Sure.
Yeah.
Nice. Like a ladybug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have beaks or not. You guys all agree with me, and I'm happy with that. But.
So I mean, I'll roll with it. Make it sound good. I mean,
I don't think we'll ever know. Really.
Do bugs have beaks?
We'll never know.
But as I've seen, he's an anomaly. His backstory is very unique. What we do know about him is that he was admonished. He used to be a slave to a village. And they would only let him out when they needed him to kill something.
Oh, wow.
He was basically their pet goon.
Hired goons?
Oh, not even hired. No, not hired. Pet. There's a difference.
Pet goons? Oh, Twister Rooney here. Assuming the Asmar are celestial, they can be crossbred with humans and most other races.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, chat, for the sexy update.
There you go.
Page 51 of the PDF that was just dropped in chat for those of you listening live.
So he was kept as a slave pet to kill things for this village and to, quote, protect them. And his whole thing, like, he wants to help as many people as he can. He wants to prove to the world that not just because a race is inherently evil doesn't mean it's evil, which is very, very ironic because we are currently dealing with a situation with the drow that tests that very fundamental.
That all drow are evil?
Yeah.
You guys are searching for your dritz, basically?
The storyline is we are searching for a long forgotten artifacts that supposedly wields some sort of phenomenal power and was the reason the war started in the first place.
Okay.
Oh, cool. Do you know the names of those artifacts?
I do, but I would spoil things if I said them.
Okay. Very good. So, bugbears are
not spoiler boys here.
Usually found in the company of other goblinoids, particularly goblins, since tribes made up of hobgoblins and bugbears tended to be wiped out quickly by other races as a precaution. So hobgoblins are kind of smarter, bigger goblins, like mm-hmm. your traditional goblin.
Yeah.
And they apparently bred bugbears and normal goblins for their own means. So you have, like, smart hobgoblins plus the big, ugly, mean bugbears.
Okay.
And those are, like, wiped out because they're, like, these are too dangerous. You can usually leave a goblin tribe because they're just annoying more than anything.
Yeah.
But hobgoblins and bugbears are considered too dangerous. So Tabaxi, every furry's favorite race. These are cat people.
Oh, yep. Lord.
Or jaguar people. They're a race of feline humanoids native to the jungles of Maztica. In general, Tabaxi do not care for wealth, unlike Meowth from Pokemon.
Yep.
But they have an almost obsessive interest in ancient artifacts, relics, and magic items. But not for the items themselves as much as the stories and secrets they hold.
We got some furry lovers in chat right now. We got a cat, all caps, yeah, and a purple
chat
heart
is
there.
Just blowing up with furry love.
Yeah. Oh, Christ, cut the stream.
Yeah. Shut it down.
Extra life was a mistake.
The Tabaxi is one of the characters I play. His name is Silverpaw.
You're the cat boy.
Oh. I am the cat boy. His name is Silverpaw. Tabaxi in the realm of Pylos, particularly Thrace, are liaisons between the three empires.
Okay.
Just
like furries in real life.
Yeah.
Furries are the glue that holds society together.
they're used kind of in a sense that, you know, when there needs to be dealings done with folk of a lesser pedigree than what higher ups would want to be seen with, they employ Tabaxi. They're very good diplomats to carry out these tasks.
Please shake hands with this poor person for me.
Exactly. So my particular character,
don't touch me. Just pet my cat.
Yeah. Tell this poor man that I greatly appreciate his assistance. I can hear you.
He appreciates your assistance.
So my particular character is deals with a lot of the slummier crowd for the different empires. He has quite a rich backstory where he wound up being betrayed And part of his betrayal is he was caught for a crime he did not commit. So my tabaxi was had some sticky paws.
Okay.
He
likes the shiny artifacts, right?
He likes shiny things, mm-hmm. and he would deal more with like thieves and rogues of that nature as a liaison between the governing bodies and these folk. So part of that is you have to know how to run with that crowd.
Mm-hmm. He's an undercover cop.
Hey, no,
if you're
no,
a narc, you gotta tell me.
he's not an undercover cop because he's not out trying to arrest anyone.
Are you a narc,
He's just really good at his job.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds like what a snitch would say.
So here's the thing. He actually, like, he enjoys thieving.
Okay.
So as he got further into this role he played for the governing bodies, he realized he really enjoyed this, and he wanted to become, like, the best thief in the world if he could.
Okay.
He got pretty good at it. So he wound up getting caught for a crime he didn't commit, and they let him free, but not before extracting his claws.
Oh.
Don't do that. It's inhumane.
Yeah.
Just flip.
So they
Did
literally...
you scratch up the couch?
Yeah. No, it wasn't me. He was literally declawed, and then someone... Now, this I'm going to be very vague about this because the first season is very heavily my character's arc, so there's a lot of things that I have to be careful on what I say here.
Okay.
But someone else took him in, gave him a new set of claws, and it's actually Gearwork claws in his hands.
Hence his name?
So his name was actually his birth name.
Oh, wow.
His name
Just
is actually
happy,
his
birth happy little accident.
Yeah.
Are these gold?
Yeah.
It's a self-fulfilling
Damn it.
The self-fulfilling process. Yeah. You call your kid Damon, it'll grow up to be a demon.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so he's given these claws and a monocle is grafted into his eye because he was wounded as well. That helps him see when he's picking locks and stuff like that. But he wound up falling in with another one of the governing bodies. And it sent him on a downward spiral where he eventually found everyone else. Through that, he was actually found in Sentinel in the stockades.
Okay.
He got caught while working. And there was a sandstorm coming. And the rest of the party had seen this poor cat in the stockades with the sandstorm going, knowing it would kill him, so they freed him. And that's...
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, people I can use. So he kind of tagged along for a while after that.
It's a great song.
Silverpaw imprinted on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So they are very... Tabaxi are very slick. They're very quick talkers. Because of the positions they hold.
Yeah,
and they have a pretty general working knowledge of the world.
So the next race in line would be the kobolds. They're small, aggressive, draconic creatures known for their aggression.
And I thought they were rat boys. I thought they were little rat boys.
No, that's like rat folk in D&D or Skaven in Warhammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought kobolds were rat people.
No,
from
they're
World of Warcraft.
They're tiny. They're like the size of rat people, but they're dragon, like draconic.
They're dragon.
They have scales. They got the dragon beak.
Yeah. Okay.
When you say it's the size of rat people, that doesn't give me a lot of context.
So they're about
three, 4 feet tall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Think about real rat people and just compare it to that. Idiot. Jesus.
Just go back to your house, check on your rat boy, measure him. You know, like, go check the marks in your kitchen, like, on the door.
How
tall he's getting, you know?
Yeah, just where he nibbled to over the years.
Yeah. All the flakes of paint are taken off.
Check your shins. How high do the bite marks go? So kobolds are resentful of their short stature. They're hated by members of other races who poked fun at them for this. So, your Edric from Full Metal Alchemist. Don't call him Runt. It was an anime, just so you guys know.
Right.
That's a great reference, by the way.
That's the main guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Edward Elric.
That's it.
So, kobolds hold a hatred for nearly all other humanoid races and enjoy killing and torturing them, but they in particular hate brownies, gnomes, pixies, and sprites, and I realize how bad it sounds to say they hate brownies.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I'm going to need some clarification on that first one, please.
They're like these, they're like cousins of halflings, which are hobbits.
Yeah.
Like these small little hobbit-like creatures, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Made with sugar, flour, water, and chocolate?
Yeah, I think there's an egg in there.
An egg white, yeah.
Egg white brownies? What is wrong with you?
Yeah, man, it's low fat. Or low cholesterol.
Yeah. So kobolds are respectful of authority figures, despite being evil, in particular when that figure is lawful evil. So lawful evil is, we've talked about this a bit before, is like devils. They are like, you know, sign this contract and we'll steal your soul.
If you're going to beat your kids, do it with oranges in a tube sock so it doesn't leave bruises.
Yeah, exactly.
That's lawful evil right for them.
Whereas like demons, like tieflings would be chaotic.
Or hit your buddy with a phone book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the law, baby.
Yeah.
So you start with what you know.
Yeah.
And then you just build the rest of the alignment chart from there, right?
Boom.
Oh my God.
Got it. Yeah.
So, what are kobolds like in Pylos?
Again, this is the other character that I actually play. So kobolds are very angry little creatures.
Mm-hmm.
That is not wrong. That is one similarity. They are I don't know if they're inherently evil necessarily. I know that they're not very good either. They are at ends with the lizard folk quite a bit. I take that back. I do know for a fact. Kobolds generally are pretty terrible creatures.
Okay.
I just happened to remember a thing we did when we were playing before we started recording. Kobolds are
I hit that kid with that phone book.
Yeah. The tube suck for phone books.
we had an adventure we had to deal with some kobolds, and they actually are pretty terrible little creatures, I just happen to remember.
Okay.
Kobolds are evil in our lore as well. There are exceptions, as with any race. And kobolds are also, they're very Aztecian in our world. Kind of compare it to something more real life.
So like the lizard men from Warhammer, which is like,
yes, yeah, yes, exactly. That is a great comparison. Just like the lizard men from Warhammer. My particular character, Scritch Scratch is his name.
Cute.
he is, a storm sorcerer, and
is that lightning or rain?
Lightning. Yeah. Lightning.
Okay.
Or sand.
Is a big thing.
Like sand. Is it Darude?
Yeah.
Sorcerer?
I sent the sandstorm after Silverbuff.
Yeah.
Lawful evil.
Yeah. That comment was lawful evil. How dare you bring up Darude? that should be dead. My particular character is, they're not very intelligent to begin with. So let's set the bar low as it is.
Good. Okay.
And then let's bring it down about four more pegs, and that's about how dumb I am.
Okay.
Clip that.
So that being said, kobolds are very, they're very evil even to their own kind. Scritch Scratch was sent on a quote journey. Because the, quote, gods demanded it, to seek out some sort of great cat hero.
Okay.
It was a total farce.
Yeah, it seems painfully vague.
There are no cat heroes.
Yeah, but he was like, oh, I can be a hero. I'm going to go do this. So the reason why they kicked him out is because he was probably one of the worst priests they've ever had.
Okay. Seems fair.
Yeah. So he winds up like, and that's a common thing, you know, they call out the weak. They're very, very much only the strongest will survive.
I do want to just get to chat here, because I was thinking this is the plot to Invader Zim, but Lilu got it in chat first. the almighty tallest kick out Zim because he's a fucking idiot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I never realized that, but yeah, you were spot on.
Yeah.
Spot on.
There's no original stories anymore.
No, there isn't. No. There really isn't. But so he winds up following this caravan that had our heroes in it through the desert, and eventually gets caught, and has recently wound up pairing up with them. And it's funny you bring up the pet thing, because the rest of the group constantly refers to him as a pet, and I'm pretty sure it's gonna give him a heart attack before anything actually kills him.
So he doesn't like being a pet, even though he might respect authority figures. And you're saying, so he's good. He wants to be a hero.
Yeah, he wants to be a hero. He is good. He blindly follows his deity, and to the point of ignorance, which is very common in lizard folk culture. You know, they because of that lower intelligence, they blindly follow beliefs to the point of ignorance.
Yeah, it's what I do with Peter.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I'll do anything Ethan tells me.
I was meant the opposite, but okay.
Oh, we have such high standards
for each other. We're just following each other around.
It's the dumb leading the dumb.
That's why we just keep going in fucking circles. Nothing ever gets better.
So the last race I took notes on, I don't know if you want to get into this, because I know John's left the show, but I do have notes on Firbolg.
Oh, no, we can absolutely talk about Firbolg. I mean, it's a very, very important part of the story, and, you know, he was a huge part of a lot of the arc. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so there was a Firbolg named Bagger.
Bagger
on the show. He played a friendly guy from what I saw.
Yeah.
He was a race. Firbolgs are a race of giantkin who prefer to avoid contact with other sentient races. They enjoy a quiet time in the woods in harmony with nature. The forts are considered sacred to them and symbolize the heart and of the earth and the adaptability of life. They saw themselves as the forest caretakers. They're basically like Scottish Highlanders. Like, they wear a lot of plaid.
Okay,
and they kind of keep to themselves in the rocky hills and forests. They have a family-centered, clan-based society. And they rejected the Ordning, a customary social order among giants and giant kin, and preferred to exercise free will by using a system called the Code. So they're Highlanders who just have a code and
Highland
a clan.
Code.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so Firbolg's in Pylos and in the Stranger Lands, very, very similar. We did not deviate too much from the standard lore in that for their overall race. For in Bagger's instance, so Firbolg are typically keep away from civilization, as you noted. Same with ours. And they are very hostile towards civilization. They're not outright, like, they're not going to raid, like, Vikings.
Okay.
But they're not very, they don't welcome or accept outlanders readily, if at all.
Don't bring your town here.
Yeah. And they will, and if you try and establish on their land, they will force you off of it. But Bagger was different. Bagger was kind of looked at as an outcast by his father, who was the leader of their tribe. And the reason he was looked at as an outcast is because he, unlike other Firbolgs, wanted to see the world. He wanted to see what was out there. He wanted to experience civilization.
Okay, he's like Ariel?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, he walked into the woods one day. There was this giant, like, half-octopus lady who promised him legs. And
here we are.
Or see the carpet from Aladdin in that case.
Carpet, sure, why not? But he... So he wanted to see civilization. But he wanted to be... He wanted to be a great leader like his father. But he kind of understood that he had to find his own way and do it in his own way.
Okay.
And his grandfather was one that he really looked up to and always encouraged him to follow his own mind and to not let his father's discouragement get him down and everything else. So he sets out and winds up in this dusty backwater town called Sentinel. People have never seen a Firbolg before. They don't know what this thing is. So
in a world full of monsters, this is a monster.
Yeah. In a world full of monsters, this is a monster to them.
One of the big gelatinous cubes is like tending bar, and he's like, "Oh God, no! What the hell is that?"
But so he walks into town. It's like, "Hey, everyone, how you doing?" Like, no ill intent or anything else, and everyone else is going, ah! Like,
quickly, Catboy, be horrified for me.
So he winds up in this town, and eventually the townsfolk kind of get used to him, and he winds up working at the blacksmith there. And he becomes a blacksmith, obtains his hammer called Black Betty, blah, blam, blah, blam.
Okay.
Blam, blam. Yeah, I've heard song.
Another running joke in our show. So and he winds up establishing himself in this civilization, and he later winds up, so part of, so Firbolgs are primarily like barbarians and very much frontiersmen. So part of that is they're very tribal-esque, and they believe in ancestry and heritage and kind of a Native American type thing where, you know, spirits and things like that. So he winds up having these visions of his grandfather in his most dire moments of need that helps spur him on. And it's a really fantastic, I think, a very real way to represent such a fantastical race.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds...
What do they look like?
They're
big-ass Scotsman, I guess. Yeah. But tall.
Actually himself is blue.
Yeah, they have like pale to gray to very light blue skin in Faerun.
I was just imagining the Scottish flag just over and over and over again, just like sequenced down their bodies.
They typically have red hair, sometimes like brown or blonde hair, but typically red, and they do like the big beards. And
yeah, okay, cool.
Just a big ginger walked into town. Everyone freaked out.
Well, they have no souls.
It's horrible!
Yeah. So they're just puking on the ground. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have no souls. What do you expect?
Yeah. So, like, a bunch of guys dive over the bar into the gelatinous cube. Yeah, just like, dissolve.
If you have any ideas for good artwork, by the way, for this episode, please feel free to let us know. But I very much, I like that one.
I like a ginger guy waving and then a guy diving into a gelatinous cube.
Yeah, like dissolving on the way in.
That's all the races of Pylos.
Fitzy says tall gnomes.
Tall gnomes. Yeah,
the world's tallest gnome!
But an average guy.
Me.
And they are giant kin for Bolg, but they're not particularly giants, tall. Right? Yeah. Okay. They're like 6 to 7 foot tall.
Okay. They're biggins, but not like freaky biggins.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's plenty of other races too. That's just the main ones. Like we have our own version of Uber. It's called Goober. It's run by goblins. So that's a thing that exists.
Yeah. So those were the three main races plus the PC races, not politically correct, but player character races.
How do you call a Goober exactly? Is it magic? Do you have a crystal that?
So funny you should ask. We actually have something in our world also called the Ethereal Network, or Ethernet
for
short.
Cool, we're out of
time.
Thanks, dude.
It is steampunk, to be fair.
Yeah, that's I forgot about that for a second.
not high fantasy.
Yeah, we have a thing called the Ethereal Network, or Ethernet for short.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Yeah, so that's how we communicate using ethergrams and things of that nature.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Anything else cool in Strangelands?
More puns, please.
There are plenty of puns. We have a lot of fun with it. We try not to take ourselves too seriously. There's a lot of really rich backstory. There is... Oh, man, try not to spoil too much. It takes steampunk fantasy in a direction it's never gone before. This world that we're building and creating, we've actually already had people asking us if we're ever going to put out a source book. And while we'd love to, right now the time just isn't there.
Yeah. That's a lot of work.
It is. It absolutely is. But it's, you know, the more we play in it and the more it grows, like, I realistically can see having a full-fledged source book for this thing. It would be absolutely incredible.
Well, that would be awesome. We'll play it on stream. Next life. So you better have it out in a year.
Yeah. <You're> ready.
You guys can catch Strangelands on any podcast app. Are you guys on Spotify?
Oh, we are not on Spotify.
Neither are we.
No, we're not. We are not.
So any podcast app, just look up Strangelands. You guys release every Friday?
Every Tuesday we release. Tuesday. Every other Friday we record. Okay. You can follow us on Twitter at StrangerLands. And we also have a website, thestrangerlands.com, where you can browse our shop called The Sharp Dresser. That is a canonical shop where we get our gear in-game. but it has a whole bunch of awesome designs and logos you can put on t-shirts, notebooks, coffee mugs. I mean, sky's the limit. There's also a section there where you can submit what we do a thing called Strange Questions. At the end of every episode, we answer a fan question. It can be about anything, about the show, personal question for us. We'll answer it. So you can submit one there or email it to us at thestrangerlands.com. And we also have a Discord server called Tiefling Tales, which you can get to through our website as well.
Awesome. Very good. And can we find you on Twitter? Do you want to drop that as well? Or
yes, you can find me on Twitter at Tigurius87. It's Tigurius87.
Okay, cool. And Jambo, if I wanted to find you. I know that we're live, but this is for the iPhone crowd.
Oh, yeah, it's TLB underscore JAYMIL on Instagram. And that's it for me.
I'm at Pete O'Donohue on Twitter. I do all the artwork for The Lore Boys at theloreboys.com and on our Instagram, which is Lore Boys Podcast. Also, if you want to download the 1080p versions of all of my artwork, it is on O'Manahue on DeviantArt. Mm-hmm. Two silent letters and all of those things because, whatever, you got to earn my attention. Come on.
Let's try them all.
Yeah.
I try every letter. One of them's got to work.
And Ethan.
Yes. What can I do for you, Peter? What's going on?
Where are you on the internet?
Oh, right. I'm at Ethan the Dead Man. Find me on Twitter. That's the best place for me. We're at theloreboys.com. That's where I post the episodes and your artwork.
Yep. Leave Strangerlands a review, definitely.
Leave Strangerlands a review. Leave us a review.
Leave us a review also as well.
Yes, leave these good guys a review. They're amazing.
Yeah. Even if you've just heard this episode of The Lore Boys, I think Trav did a good enough job for you to leave a review on the Strangerlands podcast.
Yeah, 5 stars, okay. Was good on other show. We'll listen and change review later.
Yeah, listen, I won't tell cops on you. I'm not gonna rat you out. I'm not gonna be like Silverpaw, be a total narc.
Some fucking snitch.
and if you want to support us financially, don't do it. Give to charity because yes. We're streaming for Extra Life right now. And if you're listening to this on Wednesday or at some future date, look up a charity near you and give $5 to them.
No Lore Boys Prime this week.
No goof, anyway. Yeah.
No jokes.
And that constitutes a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Thank you so much, Trav.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, that's a podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.